Welcome back to the Extension Experience Podcast. I'm Dana Zook. Listeners, this is the second week of a two-part series of a conversation I had with Dr. Mark Trotter earlier this summer. He was at Oklahoma State University from March to about July, working on some precision ag work in the livestock sector. And so he has some really unique stuff to share. This is part two of our conversation. If you didn't catch part one, be sure to jump back in the feed and catch that episode. In general, ag producers, maybe, you know, out in Western Oklahoma or Eastern Oklahoma that just do their job every day, they think that, you know, foot and mouth disease is not a big deal to them. However, I think in the recent detection of New World screwworm in Southern Mexico, like, I think that people are really paying more attention to some of those things. And so this is just a great technology to try to help us in the future detect some of those things. Are there some producers that are utilizing this just in real world on large operations? And what is the scale? So in Oklahoma, we have little producers, we have big producers, mostly, you know, as you get west, larger operations. But, you know, how does that look in Australia? And how do some of these producers utilize that technology? Are they adopting it?
Yeah, there's definitely a bunch of early adopters out there that are, you know, using and testing the technology. The sensor systems are still really what I'd say is early days in their development. You know, I sort of make the analogy that we're back at the brick phone phase. You know, we're really just started out. So that idea that you know, your phone's the size of a house brick, as opposed to now, you know, my iPhone is, well, you know, it's a tiny little thing with all this functionality. And so we've got to go through this, you know, technology development process to get these smart tags working like, you know, your iPhone. But nonetheless, and there are definitely some applications already that producers are getting value out of. And there are a whole bunch of, there's probably about half a dozen or so, maybe more, manufacturers of these smart tags out there selling these things out in the industry. And there's a bunch of producers out there using them already for various applications. And even really simply, one of the most simple applications is just finding your cows. Because these things have a GPS in them, you can just dial into the system and look where your cows are and actually go out there and locate them really easily. And that's a massive thing for us because the landscapes in which we operate are pretty extensive. So if we want to find a given animal, it makes that vastly more efficient. Even in small operations, so the research station on which we work would be about 3,000 hectares. Oh, sorry, I should have converted that to acres.
I don't know if I can do that conversion in my head.
call it, you know, 7,000 acres or whatever it happens to be.
Oh, man. Okay.
But which is, you know, that's not a massive operation where we are, but our guys use it during calving to go and find calving cows because they'll sneak off and then you just can't find them. And having some of these sensors on means you can just drive straight to where that animal is and check that she's okay. And so that makes a big difference. In terms of the scale broadly of beef operations in Australia. So our biggest beef producer is AACo, a publicly listed company. They're running about 450,000 cattle, so about 200,000 breeders, or cows, cow calves, pairs. So that's the top end. And then, like everyone, we go down to the small hobby producer. But probably one of the biggest differences is that I think you folks have a lot more small operators than we do. So I think your average cow calf herd size here is something like 30 or 40 cows.
Right.
And
right.
Ours would be maybe four times that, maybe more, because we still have a lot of small hobby producers for sure, but we have a lot of our, I guess, core operations are, you know, family operation, and there's no off-farm income, and they're running that as their business. Mm-hmm. Certainly where we come from through central Queensland, you know, I'm going to guess that the average, you know, family run operations run about 800 cows or something like that as a viable business unit. So that's a big difference in terms of that structure of the beef industry between Australia and the US. And that certainly drives how technology is being adopted. The other part of it is that we get very little subsidy. And I know you guys have some challenges in the beef industry in that space too, but how that sort of plays through is there's no subsidization of our cropping industry, unlike some of the supports that are there for your cropping guys. So we get no cheap corn,
cheap
feed, which means that across the board, our producers are extremely efficiency driven agricultural producers. And so there's very little support from the government. And so they've got to either make it or they don't make it and they get out of the industry.
Right. So the economies of scale are have to be a little bit, you know, they have to pay, take advantage of those economies of scale a little bit more with less subsidies. Yeah. And I would think if there was no cheap grain, that you would be potentially, it would be very important to manage your grass.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And so it also impacts through on just that, I guess, the opportunities for finishing animals as well. So the average, I think the average days on feed for us is like 60 or 70 days in the feedlot. I think it's 200 days for you folks over here.
Yeah, a little higher than 60 to 70, I
think. Yeah. And so I guess the big picture is that Australia is far more, I would say, efficiency driven, and any sort of adoption of technology has got to work at a core business level, as opposed to say a lot of your cow calf operators here who have an off farm income, and they may actually be interested in adopting some of this technology because they're working, you know, 40 hours, 50 hours a week, and then they're turning around to do, you know, 20 hours of farming or more probably in the time off. And there's a real role there for that technology to help them be more efficient in that. And they can probably afford to pay a little bit more for the technology. In Australia, the return on investment is absolutely critical from a straight business unit sort of calculation, as opposed to here where, you know, the ability to save some time, personal time, is a big driver for a lot of your operators.
Yeah. So put a pin in that. I'm going to ask you about that at the end.
Sure.
As far as smaller operators. So from my understanding, Mark, Queensland is the far northeast state of Australia. Yep. And am I right in assuming that like 50% of beef production occurs in Queensland?
That is correct. Okay.
Sorry.
Without hopefully offending too many of your listeners, Queensland, we think of ourselves as we're a bit like Texas. We're the biggest and best at everything, right?
That's okay. So. We get it. We understand here.
So, yes, Queensland certainly has the most cows of any state in Australia. And then actually where I come from, the Fitzroy Basin, which is that sort of our county, our region, if you will, we have the most cows of anywhere in Queensland. So we're known as the beef capital of Australia is the claim to fame of Rockhampton, where I come from. And I'm just going to put a little shameless plug in here. Every 3 years we have what's called Beef Australia, which is it's a week-long festival of nothing but beef. And if anybody's interested in doing a bit of international travel in 2027, the first week in May, Beef Week, Beef Australia will be running in the first week of May 2027. And it is a big deal. So out the town in which I'm based has about 50,000 people, but we have 120,000 people go through the gates of Beef Week. So it shuts down our town for a week.
I bet so.
And I've had a few people go there that have been to some of your events over here, and I'll probably get all of these wrong, but like they've said it's a, like if you put all of your big beef shows together, NCBA and I can't even remember the rest of them.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Then you might be getting close to the Beef Week event. Take that with a grain of salt. Remember that I'm a Queenslander and I think I'm the best, biggest and best at everything. Right. So.
Oh, I understand. I think that's great. So that's something to think about. Beef Week.
Yeah, no,
2027, absolutely. Mark your calendars, everybody. That's really cool.
So if you Google up Beef Australia, you'll get a rocket. You'll see the website for that. And look, we have a whole bunch of people come over from various roles over here in the US and have visited, and they all go back saying it was worthwhile going to see what's happening down under, as you
down
folks
under.
Would say.
Well, I think it's so valuable to get that perspective. And so that's why I'm asking you all these questions, because it's hard to understand, you know, how our industry compares to yours. And it's so interesting. So in addition to beef cattle, Australia has a pretty large sheep producing industry.
Yeah, no, I think we're the largest sheep wool exporter and maybe one of the largest lamb meat exporters as well. Population, I can't remember our flock populations off the top of my head, but it's certainly a big deal in Australia. And so we've traditionally run a lot of merino, so fine wool or wool sheep. Across parts of Australia, and it certainly remains a really big industry for us. And then off the back of that, there's crossing of those sheep with terminals to produce lamb. But what's actually happening is you're seeing and I think we're seeing that here as well, from what I understand, shift into the non-wool sheep and more specifically for meat. And so we actually eat a lot of lamb in Australia. You guys just don't eat much lamb at all, and I understand why that is. I've talked to a lot of older folks around here that grew up having to eat canned mutton after World War II.
Yeah,
and that hasn't sat well with them, and so they won't eat it ever since.
Yeah, I think our cooking skills in lamb is not real great.
I'm actually looking for the first. I said to my wife the other day, I'm going back to Australia like next week, and I said the first thing I'm going to do, I'm just going to go and buy a lot of lamb. We're going to eat nothing but lamb for the first week that we're back. I kind of miss it. So
yeah,
and you certainly can buy it over here, but it's certainly not nearly as common as it is in Australia. Mm-hmm. So sheep industry's big for sure. But sort of changing a little bit, and certainly where we are in Queensland, central Queensland, our sheep industry in western Queensland was massive. But that. It got really impacted by predation, so wild dogs, dingoes attacking a lot of sheep. But we've actually seen a lot of what we call cluster fencing, so predator exclusion fencing going in around these operations, which means they can go back into sheep and or goats, managed goats. There's actually starting to be less merinos, or the growth industry is the meat sheep, the non-shearing meat sheep. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. Some of the technology you're working on, they're using some of that in sheep industry to identify predation.
Yeah, actually. So it's short or quick story is that the development of the sensors, these smart tags that we're looking at, they're quite heavy. So they're around about 35 grams. That's just a little over an ounce. And that really limits their use in sheep because of the ears just can't hold that weight. Okay. However, I actually have producer partners that have attached them by other means, like to the horns of animals and all sorts of weird and wonderful ways.
Okay.
And are using them to track sheep and look for predation events in some of these sheep flocks. And
okay.
So we've done a little bit of research over the years in detecting or looking at how sheep change their behavior when they've got a predator present. And then, yeah, people are out there starting to use it for that sort of application now. Yeah.
It's in all types of industries. And so I think as we go along, it's going to become more available. So in Oklahoma, we have just kind of emerged from another short-term drought as you were coming back into the state, Mark. So as we wrap up and have a last few questions, so tell us a little bit about the weather and what kind of Australia is experiencing right now, because I feel like we hear when we talk about liquidation in the United States, we always compare like, oh, Australia is liquidating too. So our cow, cow beef that we import is impacted by that. So, I mean, I bet everybody's interested. So what's the weather like right now, the conditions and that sort of thing in Australia?
Yeah, sure. So we're doing pretty well. There's been some little regional droughts, but generally we've had some absolutely cracking seasons, actually a little bit too cracking. When I flew over back in March, we had massive floods just go through some of our Western Queensland areas and actually drowned a lot of livestock, which was pretty unfortunate for a lot of the producers that I work with in my region. It's pretty devastating. On the back end of that, though, mud makes money and they're growing a lot of grass in various areas. And I'm not quite sure where we're up to in terms of our herd populations, but when we're not in the same space that you guys are at in terms of low numbers and rebuilding. But our beef price is really being supported. It's pretty good, and it's being supported by the fact that you guys are pretty desperate for beef cattle over here and trying to rebuild. Mm-hmm. It's been interesting driving around talking to producers over here, just understanding some of the challenges that these guys are facing. So, talking to producers that have they are just pulling anything that's underperforming. Any cow that doesn't, you know, get pregnant, she's gone because she's just worth so much money. Mm-hmm. But then you've got guys also that are looking at replacement heifers thinking, well, geez, they're just worth so much money. And, mm-hmm. you know, do I sell them now and just make money while I can? But that's obviously parasitizing the long-term growth rebuild of your cow herd. And so there's some real challenges for producers to make some of those decisions, I guess, and what that the implications of that for you folks over here. Highly selfishly, if we need, the longer you guys take to rebuild, the better it is for us.
Right, right. I understand. We got it. It's a world market, right?
Yeah.
It really is. Whether we want to just hide out in our operations here in Oklahoma or not, it is a world market, and it's an important part for both of us, both countries. So,
the other thing that we've got very jumpy about is tariffs.
here too.
So we're a little bit concerned about where that might end up, and it's obviously settled down a little bit. But, you know, when I first turned up here 3 months ago, there's a lot of concern around where that might go. I think, there's a lot of opportunities, I guess. I mean, outside all of these sort of industry competitive issues that we have, you know, if some of your producers sat down with some of our Australian producers, you pretty quickly find out where there's not much difference between ranchers and you know, or cowboys and ringers. We call them the equivalent of our cowboys called a ringer. And so we're all pretty much the same, all pretty much facing the same sort of challenges between here and Australia and the US. And so I guess long term, this is why I'm here now, is, you know, trying to develop research relationships and collaborations, because in this context of, say, foreign animal disease detection, we've both got the same problems, and there's some real opportunities to work together to, you know, to hopefully keep some of these diseases out of both countries, because the impact of FMD getting into either one of us would be pretty devastating for that country. So,
Yeah, I think that's a great place to leave it, Mark. Thank you so much. The relationship between Australia and the United States, I agree. I feel like coming from a different state, producers are a little bit different, but for the most part, we're very similar. And coming, you know, between countries, we're all kind of doing our best to make it in the ag industry, which is full of ups and downs. Naturally, we're impacted by the environment and the weather and all that kind of thing. And so it makes it kind of hard, and it's the same across the world. So I hope that you've enjoyed your time here in Oklahoma, Mark, and you're headed back next week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've had a fantastic time. So my wife has been working in agronomy. She's doing sabbatical herself. She works in sort of the development of new crops in Australia. So things like sesame, which you guys have a bit of an industry in. And then we've had two boys over here. They went through school in Stillwater. Thoroughly enjoyed that. They're actually not that excited about going home. Not that excited about going home. They've both got a bunch of friends over here now. But I'm definitely looking forward to getting back and starting up again back in Australia. But I suspect I'll be back, and we've got a bunch of young researchers that I work with who will be heading over here actually shortly to continue sort of visiting, and we'll hopefully be hosting some of the folks from OSU back in Australia to develop that relationship even further. So
that's great. Well, I'm sure that we would invite your sons to come back and work in animal science. I can't imagine what relationship they would have made and how that will take them down the road. And so I'm so glad that you were able to come here, and thanks so much for joining me, Mark, and taking the time on the podcast. It's been really cool.
No worries.
So, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. If you have any questions about Dr. Trotter's research, reach out to me, and I'll direct him to Dr. Reuter, or we'll get some more information for you. But I think he's got a strong line of connection between Oklahoma State and back in Queensland, so I'm sure we can get some questions are answered if you have those. So thank you so much, listeners, for joining us today. Enjoy those summer temperatures and have a wonderful week.